This is the Kinky Cast, an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 104 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. Today, our guest is Sister Mary Avon Trapp of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Well, it's a new year, Beast.
Yes, it is. I'm actually glad to have those holidays behind me.
Boy, it got pretty intense there for a while.
Oh, when you got a poly house? Yeah, it does.
A poly plus vanilla family.
The vanillas, they just take care of themselves somehow.
Yeah, it's always nice to keep a firewall in certain places. Other than that, we have some real changes to our website, and those who haven't visited it in a while, we have a 2015 archive that is very detailed. And go through there, you'll see all of the show logos for each and every person that has appeared. And there's a description. When you click on the page, it brings up the audio player, and you can move forward and backward in time. It's a very detailed page, and I think it'll be a lot better. Plus, we turbocharged the site, so it's so much faster than it used to be.
Turbocharged. Was that a Hemi or a big block Chevy?
Definitely a Hemi.
Hemi. Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yeah. So this one is, it's smoking. We got rid of a lot of the things that had to load in the past. And so we keep five episodes over on the right column, which are the current five episodes. We also have in the middle of the page, the show logo so that you can see what the person looks like that we're talking to. Then if you want to go back a ways, go into the archive. We have a 2014, 2015, and a 2016 archive that's just getting off and running.
So you streamlined it a bit.
Chopped off all the rugged corners there, and it's a smooth running machine.
Fitting a round peg in a round hole is much easier.
You betcha. Today, we have a special guest on the phone, Sister Mary Avon Trapp, who is a sister in the Atlanta Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Hello, Mary Avon.
Hi, how are y'all doing?
Very good. I first had my brush with the sisterhood in Amsterdam in 1992. Didn't quite know what to expect, because I noticed that one of the sisters had a full beard, as you do.
Yeah, a lot of us actually do.
So explain that a little bit.
We're an order of 21st century nuns dedicated to the manifestation of cosmic joy through freedom of expression, charitable acts, community outreach, and social activism. We're not affiliated with any religious group, and while a lot of us are queer, we definitely have some women that are straight that are nuns. So whoever you are, we take you as you are. If you're fit in with our group, then you're welcome. So you don't need to change your appearance or change who you are to be a sister.
So this is very community service oriented.
It is, very much so.
What communities are you serving?
Well, I service a lot of different communities, ones that keep me up very late at night. But as a house, we service in Atlanta. We've done a lot of different things. Starting out at the beginning, back when our house was still a mission house, which means that they were not a fully recognized house. They were going through the stages. Just like you go through stages to become a sister, you go through stages to become a full house. So early on, they did things for like Susan G. Komen, breast cancer. Over the years, it's been PALS, Pets Are Loving Support, that helps give people who are sick and, you know, elderly, keeps pets with them. We've done things for queer veterans. We've done things for Positive Impact Mister Center that does rapid HIV and STD testing and counseling. One of our founding sisters was actually one of the founders of Lost and Found Youth, which helps homeless LGBT youth in Atlanta. So we've kind of done things across the spectrum. Last year, we did a few things for some different things that were new to us. We helped a writer who was doing the AIDS life cycle and some things like that as well. We've helped non-queer organizations like the Atlanta Food Bank. We don't really have a set guide as to what we choose to help. If people come to us and say that they need help, then we're there.
When you're helping vanilla organizations such as the Pet Project and those sorts of things, do you go in full habit or do you go in street clothes?
Some of us will attend events in street clothes. That's more about having the time to, as we call it, manifest. Some people don't have the time, you know, with their regular life, because sometimes that can take, you know, 2+ hours to get, you know, in full habit and put on white face. So some people will come in the street clothes, but that's not about what the organization is. The organizations that ask for our assistance are well aware of what they're getting. A lot of them are very supportive and love the fact that we're kind of doing the reverse of what organized religion has done for so many and created all this guilt. We're very free spirits.
It's fantastic to see this. As I said, I saw it in Amsterdam, and it was Pink Sunday, which is the big gay event in Amsterdam, and it was all over town. And I was walking by a church, and the nuns were out on the dock on the canal blessing the water, which I thought was quite interesting. As I was walking up, I saw that one of the nuns had a beard, and that was the first time I had had any association. I went, that's very interesting. And I went up and talked, and they were just the nicest people you could ever talk to and full of service.
I know a bunch of different sisters, and while they're all great people, there are some that are, their personality outside of face is very different. They're more sarcastic or a little bit, you know, somebody might be put off. And it's interesting how some of these sisters get into face. And while they're great people out of face, once they put on that face, their personality changes. And they're just a, you know, a ray of sunshine, very outgoing. And their personality really changes to something, you know, that's very welcoming. Just to make sure that nobody's put off.
The organization is based out of San Francisco, as I believe, right?
Yes, that's where the what we call the mother house is, where the everything started.
When did it all start?
It started in 1979. There were some actual habits that were borrowed for a Sound of Music sing-along. They were borrowed from an order of traditional nuns, I guess I'll say, in the Midwest, and then they were taken to San Francisco. And on Easter weekend, 1979, four men, you know, donned those habits. One of them was actually carrying a machine gun and, you know, walked through the Castro and walked through San Francisco. The reaction was apparently just, you know, overwhelming. So many people were just so excited about this. I guess when you have the Catholic Church, which has been so oppressive for so long, and then you have four, you know, gay men in the attire of something that, you know, related to the Catholicism, it's kind of breaking it down. And you know, it kind of takes away the power that symbol of the Catholic Church has. It was very popular. And so Sister Vicious Power Hungry Bitch was one of the founders. And so she got some, you know, a couple of those guys together and some other people and started the Sisters. And it developed over time to what we know it as today. A couple of years later, we saw houses spring up in different places, Australia. There's been some, you know, in Europe that have come and gone and then come back. We're seeing that right now with Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, is still a mission house. Years ago, they had a full house there that closed up, and now they're starting a new one. Paris has three houses, so it's really branched out to what it is today with 32 houses around the world and 8 mission houses currently.
How big is the house in Atlanta?
In Atlanta right now, we have about 20 active members. We have a lot more that come and go and as they have time, but that 20 is about 18 fully professed members, which can be sisters or guards, and then we have 2 novices. Sorry, excuse me. We have 2 novices and a postulant, so it's more like 21 right now.
So you're using the hierarchy. That's interesting.
You know, we do specify, okay, well, fully professed and novice or postulant. You work your way up, making sure you're a right fit for the house and vice versa. So you get different privileges or powers as you work your way up, and then the final stage being take your vows as a fully professed member.
Sister Mary Avon, tell us about your journey in the house. How did you get started, and your postulate and novice phases?
Well, it's interesting. My first contact, you know, I feel like I had seen pictures of sisters, you know, and you can't help but see them pop up from people going to Pride and, you know, San Francisco and different places. But I think the first time I ever really took notice was when I was a volunteer archivist for the Memphis Gay and Lesbian Community Center. And there was a photo, an 8x10 glossy photo that came in with a donation of paper ephemera and what have you from a leather man that had died. And on the back, it had her name, which was illegible, and it said something about her passing away after a car crash. And that was the first time I ever was like, okay, this is interesting. I want to know more. Not too long after, I started traveling to Atlanta. I had the intention of moving, and there I got to know what is now my house. At first, I was what we call a sister stalker.
A sister stalker?
Yes, a sister stalker. And there's a lot of different types of sister stalkers. We have some that, you know, just want to be around that energy. Some that are all about the volunteering and the community service. Some that just like the drag aspect of it. And then we have the sister fuckers, or what we also call clown fuckers. They're around because they want to hook up with a sister. I was, you know, really attracted to the energy and the community service and fundraising. I saw my mom do Junior League and things like that, and I always wondered if there'd be a place like that for a gay man. I joke and I say that, you know, I found my gay Junior League with the sisters. After I got settled in Atlanta in 2014, I announced my intention to join. I aspired, as we call it. And from there, you have a minimum 13-month journey to become a fully professed sister. I went on that journey. You're assigned a mother who kind of guides you through the beginning of that. Once you become a postulant, you get a mother. And at that point, most people pick out their name, which sometimes for some people changes by the time they're fully professed or even after. But I went, you know, along that journey. And then when you get to novice sister, which is when you can actually, in our house, you can don the coronet. At that point, you receive a big sister as well. And they help you with your novice project. And the novice project is to help you create an event and get out there and do all the steps involved and shows that you're capable of doing what we do as sisters. So for my novice project, I actually went in and created some cloisonné lapel pins and got out and we did penny drives to raise money and took pre-orders within the house. And then we ordered these pins, which are a wonderful fundraising strategy because you can turn around and sell, if you're active in the leather or kink communities, you see a lot of pins being sold, oftentimes around $10. So it's a great way to fundraise with not a ton of work. So that gives us a perpetual fundraiser for the next several years.
What was it like the first time you donned the habit and went on a journey out in the world to help the community?
The first time I did it was as a postulant, because at that point you can do it and you're given a gray veil. Now, like I said, this is for our house. In different houses, things can be very different. But the first time I ever put on face was very interesting. You know, I've been shown how to do my face and I had offers to, you know, people to sit down and do it with me, but In some respects, I'm very independent. I like to do my own thing, and I wanted to do my own face. It was very much a hot mess, and I do some wild faces. You know, I joked, I was like, you know, how do you solve a problem like Mary Avon? It was, you know, outlandish and wild and kind of looked like a three-year-old painted it on. But I still look at that photo, and it makes me laugh because that's me. You know, I felt so much energy in that face. You know, putting that face on, it's so empowering because of the way that people treat you and approach you as a sister. And that's why, I mean, part of the reason that some people take their face so seriously. We have one member in our house, Sister Gunza, who says that her face is her ministry, and she gives great face.
I like that turn of phrase, yes.
She's great at it. And for me, I just like to put something on that makes me recognizable as a sister. So all are coming from different places, And I think that's a beautiful thing. We're all very diverse, even though that we're all sisters.
How is this working in Atlanta? I understand San Francisco, Paris, some of these are more liberal communities, but Atlanta, while it's the most cosmopolitan in the South, is still a bastion of Southern Baptist tradition. What's your reception in the public?
It's normally very positive. Every once in a while, we encounter something. I've heard it more before I became a sister from leather people. Oh, well, sisters don't belong in the leather bar. And that's something that I went to really fought people over. And I don't hear it as much now because people know not to say that around me, both because I will fight them, you know, over that and the fact that I am a sister now. You know, we don't encounter a whole, you know, lot of issues. There are a lot of people that we would assume to be straight that encounter us when we do like penny drives, when we're out on the corner collecting change for some fundraiser, and they get really excited. They honk and they wave, and we actually collect a good amount of money when we do penny drives, and people are really supportive. Every once in a while, we get a comment, you know, directed our way, but for the most part, people are more curious than they are angry or violent or anything towards us.
And I believe you have the title of the Queen of Slinging Jello Shots.
I love doing Jello Shots. Can't stand making them, but I love to get out there and do that. And I have a lot of fun with it. My grandmothers, both living and deceased, would be appalled, as would my parents. As someone who grew up in the Baptist and Presbyterian churches, I get out there and I sell Jello Shots, and I sell them as communion.
Gotta love it.
I don't always know what's in the Jello shots. Sometimes they're made for us or I make them. But I like to, you know, tell people it's the body of Jose Cuervo or Jim Beam or someone. It doesn't matter. You'll love it and it'll absolve you of your sins.
At least for the moment, it will absolve you.
Yes. I always tell them I'll be back around in about 15 minutes. You look like the kind of person that's going to need more absolution by that time. It's normally very popular. Some people are kind of take a step back and give me a look of horror. And I can tell that they've had a very religious upbringing. But, you know, a lot of people end up, you know, warming up to it, and they think it's hilarious, and I think they want to do it that much more. I get out there, and when I do Jello shots, I don't want to push or guilt anyone because that's not what we're about. But I really work those Jello shots, and I like to do something special when I make them. I have my little secret tricks. I put some of my essence in them. You know, I get out there and, you know, I always pride myself because I can take, you know, something like 65 Jello shots and end up making like $180.
Impressive numbers. Impressive. You are part of the Sisters of the Perpetual, but you also are in several other communities. Has your other self, Northman, you hold a couple of titles, don't you?
Yes, I was previously a rubber title holder down here in the Southeast, and I'm the current Mr. Southern Coastal States Leather 2015.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'll actually hold that title until March at the Coastal Empire Sentinel Run renewal when I step down.
Community service is something that's always been at your core, it sounds like.
It is. It's something I'm very big on, like I said, because partially because of my upbringing. You know, there's some things that stick and there's some things that don't. And that really stuck, watching my mom do so much when I was younger and being very active in so many different things. Growing up here in Memphis, it was Junior League, Le Bonheur. She helped, you know, with campaign elections. She did things with our schools. And that's just something that really stuck and I was really fond of. And when I see issues, I have a hard time ignoring them. I want to get in there and I want to do whatever I can to bring awareness so we can create change and make things better. When I first competed for a title, it was about, for me, it was, I wanted that soapbox because in the leather kink community, because there are titles that are not specifically leather, that are more just kink. When people really give a lot of power to title holders, and because titles matter, I'm not saying that, you know, they should matter as much because they're not, everyone does the same thing as a title holder, but you know, titles matter because that's why we call, you know, secretaries personal assistants or administrative, you know, assistants, and we now call stewardesses flight attendants. People care about a title, so I saw it as a good way to create some change.
The Flaming Sugar Bakers is your Atlanta house, is that right?
Correct. That's what we often do business as, the Flaming Sugar Bakers.
That's a throwback to Designing Women.
It is indeed. But you all have raised considerable dollars for the local community there.
We have. It really goes back, you know, beyond my time, back to when the house was still a mission house. There's been so much, you know, activity and so much participation, which has been really wonderful. So to give that as much as we have back, I don't actually know an exact number. I'm not sure if anyone does, because we don't get out there and it's not about competing with anyone. We just get out there and do it. So there's all the fundraisers that we're involved in. A couple months ago, we did something for Movember Foundation, which is for men's health. It ties in with the Grow Your Mustache Out in November. We don't see that money. That goes directly to the organization, whereas some money we raise goes into our grant fund and is distributed normally in the spring. So we kind of have an idea of what we're raising there, but everything else goes directly to the organizations.
You are a philanthropic organization, as well as fun, educational, as well as?
Yeah, we do a little bit of everything. I was actually just sending an email out recently about Play Fair, which is a pamphlet that was created in the 80s by a couple of the San Francisco sisters. And it's all about safer sex and sexual health information. And I was wondering if anybody had updated it to reflect things like PrEP, the new pre-exposure prophylaxis that you can take, commonly known as Truvada. It's really not as new as a lot of us act. It's been around for years, but it's really picked up and become a thing that is actually used now, but a lot of people still don't know information about it. So updating that pamphlet and distributing that is a great way to get that information out there. So we do things like that. Sister Ursula, for her, I believe it was her novice project, put out little flyers about domestic violence or violence on the street, and I'm trying to remember exactly what was in that information. They accompanied with the flyer was a whistle. If you were in trouble, if you were feared you were about to get gay bashed, you had something to kind of draw attention to what's going on and protect yourself. There's been a whole range of things that we do.
And more to come, I'm quite sure.
Yes, definitely.
Just a side note, how long have you been in Atlanta?
I've been in Atlanta for 2 years now. And that's not counting all the time that I was trying to get away down there in 2013.
Do you know Master Doug, formerly of the Sanctuary?
Yes, he is such a wonderful person.
I wanted to make reference, and I didn't know if you had known him, if you were around for any of that.
That was before I was down there. I'm affiliate member of the Tar Heels in North Carolina, Tar Heel Leather Club, and I believe he's an honorary member. So I've gotten to spend time with him at their run, Stars and Stripes and Leather, in 2014 and 2015. And he's just an amazing person. When I see him out, his face lights up and he sticks out his arms. He wants a hug from you. He's just an absolutely beautiful person.
When I met him many years ago, when the Sanctuary was still in operation, he had just lost his partner, and it was a devastating time.
I know his, history fairly well. That's what I understand, that it was a very difficult time for him, and that was before my time, but it just amazes me. He's such a, outgoing, wonderful person, and, it's great all the things that he's done for the community.
The reason I brought that up is that when you mentioned the whistle and gay bashing, he had pulled so many people in, especially young guys that are just coming out that are getting beat up on the streets and things like that. He would pull them into the Sanctuary and give them a place, a safe place, and away from some of their homes where they were not welcome to be gay.
Yeah, that's great that people did things like that. And it's still a big issue today. Like I mentioned, Sister Rapture was one of the founding members of Lost and Found Youth, which is there for queer homeless youth in Atlanta. And they have a house that shelters six, but that's not nearly enough for what we're seeing today. The number of homeless youth on the streets, queer youth on the streets in Atlanta, was around 750 on any given night.
Oh,
boy, that's quite a number.
It is. Atlanta is a kind of like a gay mecca in the South. And so a lot of people feel I can make it in Atlanta. You know, that's a safe place for me. So a lot of youth who have been kicked out come to Atlanta or already are in the Atlanta area. So there's a lot of them. The six beds that they have are wonderful, as is the drop-in center where they can get help with resumes, job hunting, get clothed, fed, you know, do laundry, and so many other things. But that's not near enough. So they're actually working on expanding, and they're working towards getting the permits to renovate a house in Midtown that will house 18 youth. So that's really wonderful, because that number is actually gone up after gay marriage was legalized by the Supreme Court. A lot of youth felt that it was then safe, you know, because the court said it was okay, that kind of validated who they were. So they came out to mom and dad. Well, mom and dad hadn't changed.
Right. Old values are still old values.
Yep. So there was a surge in calls into Lost and Found and people needing a bed. So it's really wonderful what they do. And I appreciate, you know, all the work that Rapture puts into it, as well as Sister Sissy, who is Rapture's partner, who may not work for Lost and Found, but is right there whenever she's needed as well.
And that organization is Lost and Found Youth in Atlanta?
Yes, it is. And they have a wonderful, wonderful thrift store. If you're ever in Atlanta, you have to stop by their thrift store. It's the organization, but they have the most incredible donations. So many people are supportive of Lost and Found, so they bring in wonderful items. I know early on there were donations of things like Nasty Pig clothing, which is very popular in the leather community. Some of their older, more kinky clothes that they had made. I find boots up there all the time. I found some Chippewas, you know, recently for around like $65 that were in pretty awesome shape. You can find all sorts of great vanilla stuff as well as a lot of kinky stuff and pervertibles.
Okay, Beast, road trip.
Road trip. Yeah. I'm thinking my next trip.
Oh, yeah.
Sister Mary Avon, you can be reached at a couple of places. You have a Facebook site under Mary Avon Trap.
Yeah, facebook.com/SisterMaryAvonTrap.
That's Mary with an I.
Mary with an I. My name is actually, it's really Maria Von Trapp, once you put it all together. I like Mary Avon because I make and sell my own cream cosmetics. I harvest the cream myself and I give facials, but only to men.
Okay.
And the sisters can be found at facebook.com/AlandaSisters. And there's also the website, is that correct? And that website is?
ATLSisters.org. It's down at the moment, but it should be online here pretty soon.
This will be mid-January, so it'll probably be online by then?
Yes, it should be back on, hopefully. But we respond in under an hour. Facebook says that our response time is awesome, because we're at about 45 minutes, I think, right now, for someone to get a response from our Facebook page, because we monitor that very well.
Great. We will have a link page on our website that will take people to all of your links and also some photos of the sisters from around the country and world.
Awesome. That's wonderful. You can also find out more about the sisters in general at thesisters.org. That's the website for the Mother House, and they have some really cool information on there. It doesn't have everyone. We have a little graphic that has the Wimples of the World. So
Wimples
it has
of the
some
World.
Of the fun. We are the Bonnet in Atlanta. Wisconsin is a cheese wedge. Orlando, their cornet looks like a certain friendly mouse. They have to say that for legal reasons.
Right.
But all the Wimples look different. And so it's a really cool graphic that shows some of the different, you know, ones you'll see out there.
Sister Mary, thank you for being with us today. This has been most enlightening. A lot of people don't really know too much about the organization, and hopefully they'll know a lot more now.
And please ask if you have any questions. We are happy to answer them. And thanks so much for having me.
You have been listening to episode 104 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we bring Dr. Dan to our kinky microphone.